You're with NewsHour. It's live from the BBC in London with me, Tim Franks. Given that we here on the BBC like to pride ourselves on bringing you the news and, as far as we can, bringing you something as close to the truth, as close to reality as possible, you might think there's a fairly simple formula to follow. Knowledge, good. Ignorance, bad. But maybe ignorance is far more seductive than we realise. And actually, maybe ignorance is also, in some circumstances, very useful. That's certainly the argument of Mark Liller. He's a political philosopher. He's just written a book called Ignorance and Bliss. We'll get on to the potential usefulness of ignorance in a moment. First, what about his idea that we're living through an age where more and more people are drawn to what he calls the ridiculous and the preposterous? If that is the case, why is it so?
In a time of ideological polarization, obviously, there's a great advantage in terms of keeping the team together, of people collectively turning their eyes away from certain disconfirming evidence or alternative viewpoints. I mean, that's the most obvious thing. But I think something deeper is going on now. And that has to do with the gap between the expert class in our societies and those who do not know how to judge these experts, either because they haven't had a college education or they have no interest in a particular technical thing. But I think what we saw during COVID was that people were panicked because they wanted to hear one thing with authority from someone telling them what they should be doing. And the information kept changing. Now, the information kept changing because the science was getting better. But people who aren't aware of how the scientific method works, that these are hypotheses and so on, have a tendency to protect themselves from feeling that they're ignorant, put up walls against new information. And oddly, it makes them at the same time susceptible to charlatans or demagogues who have a very simple answer for everything and an unchanging answer.
I wonder if there's a lesson also perhaps for the scientists, for the experts, for the people who claim to speak with authority, which is a difficult one to grasp, but which is that if you're going to proclaim with authority, you may have to do so with caveats to say, actually, this is as much as we think we know right now.
Obviously, that's what should be done. There are two problems with that. One is that when it concerns people's health and lives, I can imagine that they don't want to hear any hemming and hawing about how many people were in the random study and things like that, which is crucial. But the other problem is that we live in a time of press transparency, where everything is done in public all the time. Things are posted online. And in order for experts to work and to consider alternatives and weigh them, they need a kind of privacy to do that. So if on the one hand you have a demand for an answer soon, and on the other you have reporters who know people who are privy to the conversation or who have special information themselves, it makes it very hard to deal with this huge public relation problem, which is what we saw certainly in the United States with regard to Dr. Fauci and COVID. But I think even now, people in the public health world, I'm told, are thinking hard about this so that this doesn't happen another time.
It's certainly a very pointed example to use what happened over COVID and maybe its repercussions. But let's try and expand this now and think about, I mean, one of the provocative but also beguiling arguments that you make in the book is that ignorance, it's not something just to be shunned or to be warned about. Ignorance can be immensely useful. Can you explain your argument?
Yes, well, there are all sorts of things trivial and important that we need not to know or need not to know at a particular time or situation of our lives. Someone who's about to climb a trapeze should not be looking at the actuarial tables trying to figure out what her life expectancy is. Trivial examples, you know, it ruins a birthday if someone opens the presents or someone tells us about a movie that we're going to see. There are, you know, little reasons like that. And also we walk past mirrors and we suck in our stomachs and comb our hair in a certain way. So we can preserve the illusion that we look like something that we used to look like. But then there are more important ones, and there are more important ones, especially for children. We're in this odd situation in society today where children are introduced much too early into partial knowledge of things that are sexual or that have to do with their parents' relationships and things like that. And my reading of it, certainly with my students, is that at an early age, this is very destabilizing. And so we rush them into adolescence, giving them knowledge about things like, you know, the example today, of course, would be trans people, at a time they're not really capable of absorbing it. Then at the far end, we have adults who never quite become fully adults because they don't become responsible for taking care of their children in the right way. So we've all sort of moved towards an adolescent state, and that's not healthy for everyone. But also another example, think of a couple that is has been dating and it's becoming serious. It's probably not such a wise thing to ask what your current partner's sexual experiences were before, how much they love someone before. So in all sorts of little ways, we need to keep knowledge from ourselves. But when we do, there are also bad repercussions.
It almost sounds as if what you're suggesting is that for those of us who claim to be grown up, we should obviously try not to be childish. But there is something to be said for nonetheless still trying to be childlike in terms of keeping that childlike sense of wonder and guilelessness and a certain measure of humility about the world.
Well, all of those qualities are important to keep in different periods of our lives and with regard to particular things. But in order to experience wonder, you don't have to say or believe that you're behaving in a childlike way. I don't think that children experience any more wonder than we do. Our children are complex creatures, you know. They have a lot of drives, a lot of destructive drives as well. So we need to understand them as full human beings.
Mark Liller, the political philosopher, historian of ideas, professor at Columbia. He's also the author of a book called Ignorance and Bliss. It's a short book. It is very thought-provoking. That's it from this edition of NewsHour. From me, Tim Franks, and the rest of the team here in London, thanks for your company.